Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. A couple years ago, we talked about the diet based on eating the food groups our hunter-gatherer ancestors would have thrived on during the Paleolithic era. Some of the benefits of this diet, according to past guest Dr. Lane Sebring, include reducing inflammation and balancing the pH in the body. He also mentioned how the body automatically monitors the blood and will take buffers from our bones, muscle, and tissue to balance our blood pH. We get a closer look at this process through live blood field analysis. It's also called dark field microscopy, and it's a powerful tool to avert potentially deteriorating conditions. To discuss LBA and related issues such as diet, we're joined today by Maureen Fontaine. She's a certified dark field microscopist, health and wellness consultant, master herbalist, spiritual intuitive, and ontological life coach. Maureen Fontaine can be considered a psychologist of the blood. We talk about the blood's observable effects in a range of common health problems. Maureen, welcome to Another News.
Thank you for having me.
Maureen, before we get into the live blood analysis work that you do, can you give listeners some of your background, such as working with bodybuilders, and how you got into dark field microscopy and where you practice now?
Sure. Okay, so I'm located in Victoria, British Columbia. I have been doing this for quite a long time. I started off, I guess my first interest came about when I was teaching school. I was working with autistic and ADD kids, and seeing that the way the traditional approach to working with them just wasn't really making any changes. So I became very, very interested in how diet could affect their behavior and their cognitive ability. So that's where I started asking a lot of questions. Then over the years, like you say, I have been involved with bodybuilders. I was always a gym rat myself. I became a bodybuilding judge for the natural industry, and just on a provincial level, you can, of course, get much higher than I ever was. But I got the opportunity to work with a lot of athletes, whether they were a bodybuilder or a triathlete, etc., cyclist, all of those things. What I did was monitor their health from the perspective from the dark field microscopy perspective, which is a really unique perspective. So it reads between the lines and can find out and fine-tune what you're up to in a bit of a different way than the traditional approach. So that's kind of where it all started.
One of the maladies detected during live blood field analysis is inflammation in the body. And what does that look like? And does it appear the same in everyone using the LBA?
Great question. Inflammation being the cause and at the base of all that goes wrong with us inside. It can present in a number of different ways when you look at dark field microscopy or any type of live blood analysis. The number one thing that shows up is going to be something called fibrin. And fibrin is, it looks like, I always say it looks like hair on a salon floor. When you get your hair done, there's kind of these little shreds everywhere. So it's little fibers, essentially, that are throughout the plasma of the blood. It actually looks really pokey and scratchy. Sometimes it almost looks like a bit of spider webbing throughout. And that will be the first indicator, and that indicates that the liver is congested or really working hard to filter the blood so that it takes out all the things that might contribute to inflammation. The second thing I look for, of the two primary things that show up with inflammation, the second thing is little crystals in the plasma of the blood. So there'll be a lot of things floating around in the blood when we observe it. When we see crystals that have actually landed and are stationary in the plasma of the blood, now these become a little more concerning because now they're sitting there and they're actually going to start to accumulate more such pieces. These pieces are a combination of protein, fats, salts, and sugars. And they act a little bit like if you had rocks in your shoes when you're out hiking. So they sit in there and they create agitation. And because they're acidic in nature, they will contribute to the inflammatory picture. Also, when there's a lot of that kind of debris in the background, it's also a precursor indicative aspect for things like high blood pressure. And it also represents the potential of higher sugars circulating.
It's a bit complicated. The way it shows up as fibrin, why does it take on that form?
Well, anything that we see in the plasma is basically an accumulation of unprocessed proteins. Unprocessed proteins have a lot to do with the way the liver functions and filters blood. Basically, seeing that fibrin in the plasma, it just tells us that things are not filtering properly. So it's like stuff's getting through, and it's really creating some agitation. So it's a sign that the liver is stressing with the workload. That's probably the simplest way to put it.
I understand. Can you define inflammation for listeners? I know you mentioned undigested protein. Is that really the basis of inflammation? Is that what it is?
Everything stems from the pH balance in the blood. So blood should be at 7.365. That's the number that indicates perfect blood. Anytime we stray from that, because of food, because of emotions and all the things that we're up to in a day, that excess acid starts becoming an agitant. So just consider that if you have something really acidic on your counter at home, if you don't wipe it off in time, it can actually start to erode the surface. It's no different in the body.
Yes.
So it creates sort of a swelling. I mean, I think all of us know what inflammation is as we experience it in our body.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Different white blood cells. Like, it will trigger the immune system too, so the immune system now has to work harder as well. So different things will show up in the immune system to indicate, like, kind of like the white flag. Hey, we're in trouble over here. We need some help. Or this is really what's going on. So there'll be a lot of indicators.
The reason I asked that question is because I've heard different definitions of inflammation. And I think you mentioned in a previous interview where it was undigested protein. But you have inflammation occurring from radio frequency and microwave radiation from, wireless devices. That's not the same as an undigested protein. It's still, on some level, the tissue is being affected. And I wondered, I guess all inflammation is not the same.
Well, I think that inflammation can come from an internal process or an external exposure, for example, to use radio frequency waves as an example. So in the end, whether it comes from inside the body or outside the body, we still have an inflammatory process at play. There are a lot of things to consider with respect to that. So if we can determine that it's an external exposure to a frequency, as an example, then we have to remove ourselves from that situation, as well as clean up the damage from, what has happened from that. And then the third part would be to protect ourselves from any further damage by building up our own resilience within. I see those as three components. So removing yourself, doing the repair, protecting yourself from there.
The reason I asked this is because of a documentary called Take Back Your Power. We've had the producer on to talk about the film. He had a doctor, I think it was a chiropractor, who had some people stand by a smart meter, and then they took a blood sample, and they saw various conditions of the red blood cells. Some of the red blood cells were bottle capping, the edges were serrated, some of them were stacking, the blood cells were stacking up and clumping to each other. And mm-hmm. I wondered if you saw things like that in your live blood analysis work.
Oh, absolutely. So when you get sort of, there are a lot of different names for the shape of the cell that you're describing, but basically it looks like a balloon that's collapsing. And some people call that free radical damage. Some people refer to those as cloud effects in the blood, which often has to do with a higher cholesterol presentation. We can also see, for example, in pilots that have come to see me, from the radiation off their, from all the instrumentation, we will also see a lot of that free radical damage in there. So I've seen it from that perspective. Smart meters are another thing that people are really passionate about, certainly here on the West Coast, and I'm sure in many places. I have not done that test myself, but I would imagine it to have a similar effect.
Mm-hmm.
So when any time we're experiencing or we're exposed to radiation, for example, or frequencies that are non-harmonious with the body, it is more likely that we're going to have that type of presentation.
In the live blood analysis work that you do, it becomes, I think you mentioned, almost an art form. And there are many things that you can tell about a person's state of health through live blood analysis, although it's still a controversial process among the medical association. Why is it a controversial issue?
Yeah, and that's a great question. It's controversial because it's not objective, like it's subjective. So we're working with something that's moving and morphing and changing all the time. There's nothing truly measurable in it. So in other words, I can't give you your white blood cell count. I can't say how many eosinophils you have, and I can't say what your platelet count is. I have no ability to do that. What I'm interested in is the behavior of the environment. So what is the behavior of the white cells? What's the behavior of the red cells? What's hanging around in the plasma, and how are they all behaving together? I look at it this way. In a school system, you know, I can say, okay, you're going to be working with a six-year-old children at the grade one level, and usually, you know, there's a 40-60 division. We can give you all kinds of facts in terms of, you know, male-female population, how many kids are going to be more like this or more like that. So I can give you the stats. So the medical profession is very, very good at giving us statistics and providing those numbers. One of the things with live blood is that we have to hang out and watch it for a while, and we don't have numbers. So it is not as measurable at all, and that's the absolute truth. Live blood is looking at the actual movement of the blood in the bloodstream. The dry blood is actually looking at the imprints in the way that blood has coagulated or dried. So that's a little more definitive. The medical is interested, from what I know, and I only know what I know, but from what I see, is that numbers are the drivers for how all decisions are made or how many decisions are made.
You mentioned that you examine live blood flowing through the vein. How do you do that? How does that process work?
What I do is take a sample of capillary blood. So it's just a drop from your baby finger, using a lancet, which is very similar to what diabetics use to get that little drop of blood to measure their blood sugar. That one drop is put under the microscope. And depending on whatever microscope somebody's using, you know, we can magnify it 50 times, 100 times. Everybody's microscope is a little bit different in terms of those numbers. And then we watch it move. We watch what it's up to. I watch how are those white blood cells? Are they sleepy? Are they comatose? Are they really working for you and moving around? Are there too many, just as per a visual count? Because, of course, again, we don't give you numbers per se at all. You know, we want to see what's in the plasma, like in terms of the fungal potential within the blood. We want to see what microbes develop over time. And that's a really important, it's a passion of mine with my work, is what level of microbial activity is present. And because that can, in itself, can produce a ton of symptoms, where is the microbial activity at and what symptoms is it producing? And, you know, so what do we need to throw out in the way of that just to get it back to a place of balance? So it's hanging out with the blood. It's watching. Like, you know, for example, I had a client this morning who had a lot of what are called thesets in the blood. And a thesit is an indicator. It's saying, heads up, we've got something going on with the immune system, and it's all okay so far. But as I watch the blood develop, because I'll look at it again after 24 hours, I'll see just exactly where this is developing or what this is developing towards in terms of microbial presentation. And in the meantime, like, that's not you actually, but that's the potential in your blood. The objective is to come up with things that will intercept that development that we've seen 24 hours later.
when the blood is sitting for 24 hours with those microbes mm-hmm. in there, what does that represent in terms of the body, if it were in the body?
Yeah. And again, this is one of my favorite things to do with blood. So the blood should be, live blood should be sustainable on the screen for up to 72 hours. So in that period, and I look at it at 24 hours, depending on what's going on, I might look at it again in 48. But typically I stick with, you know, always doing the 24-hour culture. In there, it shows the potential. So the blood has the potential to get to become way worse, and also has the potential to get even better. Sometimes I see the blood totally turn itself around because it's always looking for balance. Microbes like to get away with as much as they can. The amount of debris and acid and inflammation that you have in the plasma is going to give them more to work with. So they will proliferate at a great rate if there's a lot of garbage in the blood.
When you say sustainable, blood is sustainable for up to 72 hours, do you mean before it starts to degenerate?
Yeah. So in other words, it starts to deteriorate as soon as I take it out of your finger. The blood is put between two slides. So there's a glass slide and then there's a cover slip, and we, you know, get it on there in such a way that it's not exposed to air for very long. That's really important. So there's always going to be a little bit of deterioration. Looking at blood, we want to look at it within the first 30 minutes that you're here. We can look at it longer, but we have to take it into consideration that it's actually been sitting for a bit. And by sustainable, to get back to the question, is that it will stay alive, basically, for 72 hours. We would want it to stay alive in some capacity for that period of time. If I look at your blood in 24 hours and it's dead, that's not a good sign, right? Because your life force is a bit shy.
Yeah, so you can determine life force. And I wonder if there's a connection with the body's ability to be without water for a couple of days. Is that a connection there?
Not to my knowledge in this case. Because when the blood did go on the screen, you were what you were.
Mm-hmm. What common issues are coming up for clients under the live blood analysis?
I see a great relationship between dental health and what ends up in the blood. So we call them ascites. They can otherwise be known as Leptotrichia buccalis. It's like a long, thin worm in the blood. It's a tubular microbe. It likes to live in the foci of the teeth, and it moves from the teeth into the bloodstream, through the mucosa into the bloodstream. So this, I've seen a number of people with really severe respiratory infections that are long-standing that have a ton of this. When we clean up the teeth, even by a simple thing like oil pulling or using structured silver water, that works really, really well. We can also use a number of other things and actually having, you know, all our dental work taken care of. But still, we have to flush and normalize the zone in there. But these things can create the respiratory difficulties that people have, the sinus issues that they have. I also see a ton of fatigue. People are so tired. So we're tired from our foods make us tired. Our lives make us tired. The emotional drains and pressures on us make us tired. I mean, the world demands a lot of us, and it all contributes to the overall profile. Digestive issues are huge. I would say that 99% of the people that come in here, even when they think they're eating a great diet, for example, I can always find somewhere to tweak it that may make the difference for them. So I don't commit to any particular approach. In our previous discussion, I said that I'm more of an advocate for being a flexitarian.
Yes.
So in some cases, we do need to eat meat, and in some cases, maybe we need a little more carbohydrates in our system, but it's how we choose them, it's the amounts that we choose, et cetera, et cetera. And it's sometimes the timing of eating. And certainly the background in the athletic industry, showed me that hands down, that that makes a huge, huge difference. So beyond that, there's a ton of depression. Depression, as is being kind of spewed all over the internet of late, is a gut issue. So I work with a lot of people in getting their brain on straight. And you know, I was seeing that back. I was seeing that back when I was teaching in the late 70s and 80s. I mean, that's a long time ago. And this is very, these changes, you know, we were noticing back then.
It's more of a gut issue than it is a psychological.
Absolutely. So a gut, it has a lot to do with the microbes in the intestines. Dr. Perlmutter, who's a medical doctor, he's a fellow that wrote Grain Brain. I love his book. He just is, man, he has a great way of presenting it. He has a ton of information, and the relationship between gut health and brain health and our emotional well-being and our mental state is now being very directly connected to the bowel. And, I mean, it's always been called the second brain for as long as I can remember. And what's cool is, even though it's taken a long time, scientific evidence is proving that this is absolutely, there's a lot of substance to that. So I really enjoy reading the materials on that because I think they're so indicative.
It reminds me of a doctor that somebody was pointing out to me who created something called the GAPS diet. Are you familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Is that connected to this at all?
It is. It is. I have had clients that have been on the GAPS program. Again, it's very specific in its approach. I really agree with a whole bunch of it. Some, of course, you know, we always can agree to disagree as well, because I really believe we're all doing the best we can for people. That being said, I've had clients that have been really successful with it and others where we're still sort of fishing around for other, you know, answers. But it has a lot of value. And again, it is doing just what we've been talking about here, is reestablishing a healthy gut.
Yes, yes. And all these other good things flow from that. All right, so you've noticed the connection with dental health and that specific microbe. You've seen the connection with depression and the gut. Are there any others that are coming up that you see that are common?
Well, okay, let's talk about the whole candida issue, right? Because people talk a lot about that and the fungal issue. And I'm really careful. My training was with Dr. Enderlein's work, and he says that we actually can't see candidiasis in the blood. So that's contrary to what a lot of people say. Dr. Enderlein has always said that we can't see it in the blood. We can actually only see it in the fluids of a cadaver. So it actually does not come out of the tissue until you're dead. Contrary to that, and I'm not here to make a claim with respect to any of that. I just watch what people say. So what I see and what other teachers of mine have pointed out is that actually what we have when we see, you know, all that sort of bubbling and fermenting process occurring in the blood, that it is more accurate to say that rather than having fungus in the blood, we have the precursor or the perfect situation for fungal potential. So the fungal potential is there. It's a hairline difference, but again, we're not here to diagnose. Mm-hmm. I will steer away from that all day long. Mm-hmm. Will I tell somebody that they have candida? Never. Ever, ever. But I'll say you have the potential for that development in the body. All indicators would suggest that that is going on some level, that you have a fermentation process that's working overtime. You know, that's like one fellow this morning, he has a lot of fermentation where the platelets and all in the plasma is all kinds of bubbly bits that are fermentation. So he has a perfect setup. His diet before coming in to kind of hit the reset button here, because he's been seeing me for a while, the diet has been leaning more into sugars and carbs and alcohol and, you know, the things we all love and that many people enjoy. So it set up the environment that is really promoting that kind of development.
Maureen, another issue that comes up is pH balance of the body. The topic is quite popular because of many issues in our food and environment, and it's an important foundation for health. What is the body doing to balance pH in the blood, and how would you describe the various pH environments under live blood analysis?
pH is definitely a really big topic, and what I've come to notice is that we will all agree that the blood is perfectly balanced at 7.365. The ways that we measure are by measuring urine and saliva pH, because those are reporters for the blood. So I've studied Dr. Carrie Rehm's work, which is the biological theory of ionization. So basically, it's a math equation. It's a math equation that shows us how to, you know, where we're out of balance by measuring some things. One of the things within that is the whole pH. So the urine gives us information and the saliva gives us information. Lots of people out there who do are healthcare practitioners will have you measure either urine or saliva pH, but seldom do they have you measure both. I just see that if we only measure one, we're actually only getting half of the story. So the pH, like the urine, for example, it tells us about how our stomach, kidneys, and adrenals are functioning. Saliva pH tells us our liver, pancreas, and lymphatic status. So if we only do urine, we're not getting the whole picture. So we have to see who's overworking, who's underworking, etc. So back to that, we all agree, we all certainly agree on what the blood pH should be at. And what I do see is that nobody agrees. There's very few people that would agree on where the urine and saliva number should be.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's like highly controversial. So there are some practitioners out there that are very well renowned who have you taking your pH of both urine and saliva up really high. In my practice, I've seen that's quite dangerous, so I'm a little shy of doing that. So I've found Dr. Carrie Rehm's approach and his foundational principles to support people in what they're up to. There are guidelines. So again, and I'll use Dr. Carrie Rehm's. He suggests that our urine and our saliva should be slightly acidic at 6.4. That tells us that your blood is perfect at 7.365. If, for example, your urine pH is really low, like let's say down in the 5 somewhere, and your saliva pH is up in the 7, that area, that distance between the two numbers is what I call room for argument. So it's like two people, right? If you're both on the same page, it all goes well. If you disagree at all, there's a lot of room for argument, and that's the same in the body. There is wiggle room, of course, with where those numbers should fall. And again, it's such a highly disputed thing. What I can tell you is the way that I work with it, I get results. I see that the way some other people work with it, they too get results.
Oh, that's interesting. So, wow, okay.
I know, it's kind of cool. So nobody needs to be right here. But what I can tell you is my experience with taking the body too alkaline, there's a danger. In my experience, is that by taking the body too alkaline, now the tissues start to solidify. So you become more like stone. When you get too acidic, things tend to liquefy. So that's why the acidic person may have more of a tendency to a diarrhea, whereas the other guy has more of a tendency towards constipation. And also, we can see, because this is way back in the day when I was teaching, when you could actually, you know, as science experiments, kids could test their urine and gather numbers. And because there were no rules about that sort of thing back then, they would notice that their emotional state, so the bully on the playground was always more alkaline. The one who cried on the playground and was so victimized usually had really acidic urine and saliva. Like their numbers were different. So it creates a different creature. We can see by physique who's going to be more acidic and who's going to be more alkaline just by observing. Yeah, so it's like it's a very interesting study. You know, I did my time attaching myself to how it should be in terms of numbers. I've let go of that a little bit because at the end of the day, all we want to do is encourage good health. But my baseline numbers have really worked for my practice over all these years.
Our guest is Maureen Fontaine, a certified dark field microscopist, health and wellness consultant, master herbalist, and a spiritual, intuitive, and ontological life coach. We're going to go to a short break and we'll be right back. If you've just now tuned in, we're speaking with Maureen Fontaine about live blood analysis. Is there a difference between men and women in terms of pH? Because someone said that because men have some more muscle content, that changes the lactic acid issue.
Possibly, but my understanding is it's more what we do with the muscles, in which case we will build more lactic acid. So I really don't know the answer to that. What I do know that if we don't get rid of lactic acid, and we see this in a lot of athletes, when lactic acid is not eliminated, there are studies that show that you will produce tumors more readily. So getting rid of that is pretty important.
You're the first person I've heard talk about becoming too alkaline, and somebody asked me that, and I didn't have an answer. I didn't really know if that was an issue, and I thought that could resolve itself because it's water soluble or something like that. But I guess you
Let me just. Well, you know, I've been particularly interested in that possibility. I had a really dear friend again back in the 80s. She was part of a group that was like really big into getting the body as alkaline as possible. And she got up into some super high numbers. And I was like really getting scared for her because I could see there were some things going on with her. And when you get too high, you start to form, you know, like I said, things tend to harden. And again, this is my experience. What happened with her was that she developed melanoma, and it was a very aggressive melanoma. And she was dead in 3 weeks. That kind of got my attention. So from there, I've been really observing, you know, what happens. Sometimes when we get too alkaline, we get too much nitrogen in the blood, and the kidneys can't pull it off, and it starts to affect the brain. It can blow out the brain, and it can blow out the heart. Athletes, back to how this conversation or this little part started, is that in people, I had a friend who was ran marathons, and he dropped dead as he crossed the finish line. We hear about those things that happen.
Yes.
And his wife later said, you know, that it was the buildup of nitrogen in his body that did that. And that can be associated with not being able to. I'm not a scientist, so I could be all wrong here. But there may be a relationship between that and the buildup also of lactic acid. So it's a curiosity.
Yes, it is. It's the first I've heard of this. And Maureen, I appreciate you describing the information that you have at hand from past experiences with other people. It's very interesting to me because there's not much data on it that I've seen.
Yeah, and in the blood, we can see when the blood is too alkaline, we will get what's called a proteate veil. So it's hundreds and hundreds of little proteins in the blood that will create sort of a Milky Way effect in the blood. So there are indicators there. I can also see in the blood when the body is kind of thinking about coming together or forming, you know, compressed tissue. And again, it's congruent with people that have tumors, cysts, fibroids. So I see, and again, there's probably no scientific evidence. I call what I do just observing behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like psychologist of the blood.
Mm-hmm.
So it's watching, you know, and it's, I remember one lady who came to see me. I said, you know, do you have any, you know, because her pH was way up there and she was trying to bring it down, and her skin was super thick, and she just had a lot of indicators that would, you know, have me ask particular questions.
Just for clarification for listeners, when you say the pH is way up there, is that way up there in alkaline?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. So her pH was pushing 8.3, and which is quite high, especially when both urine and saliva start getting up there. I asked her if she had any cysts, fibroids, or tumors in the past, and she says, oh, no, oh, no. And then she goes, oh, yeah. And she lifted up her pant leg, and she had like it was like a 12-centimeter tumor on the side of her ankle. And, you know, we get used to living with certain things, but it was just really interesting to see the correlation between what was showing up in the blood and the actual visual presentation of a tumor.
You often hear doctors and experts discussing how to reach the alkaline, but you mm-hmm. don't hear about how to bring the alkaline back to the stasis, to the 7 area. What mm-hmm. are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know what? Balancing pH is a little bit like catching the wind. So it's going to move all the time. I like to make it simple for people. Otherwise, it can be a little bit consuming and crazy-making for them. So I work with the first morning urine sample. First morning urine sample is a reporting system for how your buffering minerals are working, so sodium, potassium, calcium, and magnesium. What I do to help people balance is I use what's called a base powder. And a base powder is basically another really good, inexpensive thing to use is baking soda. People can use that too, and it's knowing how to use it in order to accomplish what you are there to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
So I have everybody come in and do a 10-day trial of measuring the urine and the saliva, and I also have them do their body temperature so we can see what the thyroid's doing in relationship to a whole bunch of things, and monitor for 10 days, and at that point, then we make the decision to how to work with it, to move it one way or the other. So it's a simple process. The body finds its own balance. If we need to bring somebody down who's too alkaline, then there are ways to do that using specific calciums, for example. But I work really simply. I believe simple is better, and just having, you know, a few powerhouse items, and also knowing when to refer out. I refer out all the time. It's like, this is where my expertise needs their expertise in order to get you the results you want. That's really important.
Is there a correlation with those with an alkaline environment and maybe that aggressive behavior, as you described in children?
Mm-hmm. The aggressive behavior can come also because of being too acidic, that's for sure. But there will be other indicators that are coupled with that. So it's not as cut and dry as just acid or alkaline. You know, the alkaline producing the more aggressive person, there will be other indicators as well. So that was a generalized experience or reflection upon an experience.
Mm-hmm.
When sugars are really high, when the blood isn't clearing, so the organs of elimination aren't clearing properly, the body can, you know, become so congested that it can hang out in kind of that super alkaline area or place. And we have to, again, just bring down, create the balance. Because if it's too alkaline, it's getting too solid and congested, and, you know, being too acidic can also, you know, produce that same those same results. So we have to meet at flow in the middle, you know, where things are freely floating.
Now, on your website, you have links to various blood types and foods that are suggested for a specific blood type. How is that determined?
Well, that's perhaps a future interview with Dr. Diadamo. But the way that I understand it is that there are certain foods are our fuel. So I'm a blood type A. I'm more the vegetarian type, or vegetables would be my primary food, mm-hmm. whereas an O is more a meat eater. So those generalized rules are excellent rules. And this is all based on his research, which is just beautiful, and I love it. He suggests that when we eat things that are not the specific fuel for our blood type, the body produces lectins, and that's sort of leftover undigested bits or proteins, etc., that can create some agitation in the blood system and really affect our immune system and digestion. Again, I'm not the expert on that, mm-hmm. but I find that it's a really excellent guideline. It gives people a beautiful guideline to follow. And everyone, when you give them a plan, the likelihood of success is that much better. What I do with Dr. Diadamo's list for the blood types is I modify. So I always tell them that his list is secondary and mine is, I have a primary list. So my rules come first. Mm. And then you're going to apply the blood type rules to my rules. And it's actually quite simple. There's a few places, and not many, I must say. There are a few places where I may not hold the same perspective as him. For example, wheat. I think that, you know, maybe the diet needs a bit of revision because there's so much evidence that, you know, gluten's an issue for the majority of us. And coffee, for example, like blood type A, we should be able to drink it, but it's so acidic, is that really wise? So that's where I kind of do my little twist on that. Mm-hmm. Is there something to it? Yes, and not just because I say so. It's because over all these years, I've had so much feedback because I've used this platform of mine and his as a baseline. I've used that for years and years, and I get feedback all the time that it has created a difference. And it is evidenced by the blood. That's, at the end of the day, the blood is going to tell the story. So you might say it's fine, but I'm going to see, whoa, maybe not so fine, so we have to fine-tune again. So it's a great baseline. There's a lot to it. I don't think it's hokey like some people think. I think there's a tremendous amount of value in it.
I asked you because of the work that you're so involved with working with blood, and I thought I might ask even further that I noticed that there isn't the A negative or B positive in those mm-hmm. charts. Is that significant?
The positive or negative is simply for blood exchange purposes and has nothing to do with how we apply foods.
That's very interesting. So
and he has like a secretor and a non-secretor status, and that gets super involved. I don't go there. Because you have to buy expensive kits to really know. And once, my motto has always been to keep it as simple as possible. The way that I work with blood is already complex enough. I need to translate that and distill that down so that the client can understand. And not saying they're not smart, they're super smart, but just so that they can absorb. And they're going to be more successful with simplification. I'm not here to give them a degree in any one of those subjects. I'm here to just help them see the plan, ABC 1, 2, 3, towards the goal that you have intended for yourself,
yes.
towards optimizing your health. We can get super distracted with, basically teaching a mini blood course, but that's not the job.
You have a link to an article on your website, Biologic Ionization Principles and Frequency Within the Body. He uses mm-hmm. the grapes as an example in that grapes possess a unique frequency upon which they live and grow, and each atom has its own frequency, which is the oscillatory rate of anions and cations in the structure. Frequency describes the resistance, electrical flow and magnetism within the atom. Does that apply to humans?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Absolutely. In his book, which is very complex, I mean, his, you know, the teaching manual or his principles and techniques book, it becomes really complex, but everything, every organ has a frequency. There are certain spins in foods and in just in everything. Emotions have a certain frequency level. Nothing is separate. It's an interesting, and like I said, it's so complex. I've studied this for a long time, and I still don't totally get all of it. Mm-hmm. But there are many energy principles that can be applied to foods and to anything living.
In your live blood field analysis work, do you see issues with sleeping problems in your clients?
Absolutely. Insomnia is a big deal. It sort of runs in waves. Like there'll be a time when insomnia is a really big deal for a lot of people, and then it sort of doesn't show up for a while. That is one place where there are those electromagnetic frequency things that are going on a planetary level. So where I notice patterns, absolutely. We have a lot of, West Coast. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on out here, mm-hmm. in terms of even the U.S. testing their fighter planes, off some of the little islands here, mm-hmm. which is really affecting people. It's affecting how they sleep. It's affecting their feeling of safety just in their bodies, even if they don't know they're testing the planes over there. And again, it may be the planes or it may be other things, but it's really interesting the timing of things.
Could you go into detail on that? Because I'm interested in it. I was visiting Victoria, and I remember being out on the coastline and seeing these Navy ships out there, and then hearing very deep rumbling out in the horizon. You could see Navy ships out there, but you couldn't really determine where the noise was coming from, but it was everywhere. I'm not sure what's going on. It sounded like a jet landing on an aircraft carrier, but you really couldn't see anything. But the noise, mm-hmm. was amazingly loud. Is some of the sleep deprivation issues and patterning surrounding that issue specifically?
Certainly could be. Mm-hmm. It's definitely possible. There's a lot going on there. Sonar and radar and all the stuff that they use with ships is a big deal. Mm-hmm. We notice, we live right down by where the cruise ships come in James Bay, and it's beautiful, and I absolutely love the neighborhood. But we can feel that shift in the frequency when the ships are in. Like, it's like you don't need to hear them, you don't need to see them, but you can feel them. Back to, what people mention when they come in here is, wow, I couldn't sleep last night. So whether it's to do with the ships or the planes or where the moon is sitting, people are, they're noticing sleep disruption. They're noticing a change in moods. They're noticing there's an interesting shift in their trust in being safe. So whoa, this floor isn't going to hold up under me. There's a lot of that during those times. It's like a mistrust somewhere because they're feeling out of sorts within probably their own electrical system. And again, this is all just theory, right? Like, I have nothing to substantiate this, but I consistently observe it. So for me, it's most fascinating.
Are you able to determine the sleep problems through the blood analysis and not when your client will explain it to you? And is that how you're able to see the patterns?
Mostly the patterns I notice the patterns that come up in discussion. So there's people talking about the same things at the same time. So there'll be a cycle of that. Are there things that show up in the blood when somebody is, when there's a lot of insomnia, they're going to have more debris in the blood. And that's when I share with him sort of the body clock. So certain organs will operate at different times. For example, the liver, when it's really working hard, is between 1 and 3. So if you wake up between 1 and 3, we know that coincides with what we're seeing in blood, which is that liver stress, as an example. So just helping people, I want you to really get to know yourself. I want you to be really committed to this relationship you have with your biology. So understand it. Understand, are you falling asleep at all and then waking up? Or are you not able to fall asleep? All of these things mean something. And they just help us to formulate a plan of action for you. If you're waking up, then maybe we have to, we have to really pay attention to the acid and work with those base powders and those neutralizing powders before bed. One of the biggest things is people just want to be heard. They want you to take them seriously because they've been to 5 other or 15 other people and they haven't been taken seriously. If they have been taken seriously, they haven't got anywhere with the program. So it's always looking at what didn't work with what they've done already.
Why wouldn't they be taken seriously? Is it?
Well, for example, and again, people that take the traditional route may have, just where they're feeling really sluggish and they have zero energy. And the number one solution for that is either an anti-inflammatory or something for depression. And they're saying, no, but it's not that. I'm not depressed. I'm down because I don't feel well, but it's not depression. You know, so they're having to fight that kind of discussion.
Oh, I see.
So they're not feeling like they're being heard.
That totally makes sense.
It's time and time and time again that happens. It's just unbelievable. It's rampant. And so if there's nothing else I do, I'm not the be-all and end-all for all people, but I sure work with a lot of amazing people that have done the amazing work, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, people love to have and deserve to have a place where they're heard and where, you know, they're authenticated. Some people are so mad about not being heard that they'll come and they won't want to, like, I always make them sign a consent form,
mm-hmm.
giving me permission to do what I do, and it's in a private setting.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been so burned that they don't want to tell me a darn thing about what's going on with them. And in 5 minutes flat, usually, they're talking their heads off because I've told them how they feel just by looking at the blood. And it's okay. I know that it's not that they're not trusting me when they can't come in. I'm the next in a long line of people that they've tried and been trained to mistrust. We have that straightened out pretty quickly. Just from, it, yeah, it's okay. Like, I'm cool with that. No problem.
Mm-hmm.
But here I can see that you have a lot of gas and bloating. I can see that you're more constipated than otherwise. I can see that you're really tired. And actually, you're more depressed than you'll ever admit. And it's amazing. The blood is amazing. It's just so beautifully rich.
What can people do to help create a healthier blood? Are there supplements to take? Are there things that you suggest?
Again, I keep it pretty simple. But, yeah, that's sort of a loaded question. I'm using things to, you know, if we just zero in on just a healthy immune system, I use a product called F3. It's a bio superfood, which is a microalgae. And Dr. Kiriak is the brains behind this particular product. And I get amazing results with people. They do so well. It builds the most beautiful white blood cells. It makes a massive difference. Another product that works extremely well for, you know, I referred to the microbes that live in the foci of the teeth.
Mm-hmm.
One of the products that is amazing for that is it's a structured silver water. And I just had a meeting with Dr. Brian Campbell, who's was a veterinarian, and he's since retired and very, very busy in the silver world. And they see amazing results with eradicating viruses, fungus. Viruses are a little trickier, but certainly funguses and bacteria are just stopped in their tracks with this very simple formulation. And all it is structured water and silver. Mm. Mm-hmm. Works extremely well. Again, if we work from the mouth, that's a very long conversation, or mm-hmm. much longer conversation than I think you might have time for. But I'm happy to talk more about that. And yeah. again, using some really simple stuff just to, number one, get the microbes out of the way, number two, balance the system and open up passageways of elimination for sure. So there is a pecking order there.
Indeed, yes. And that reminds me of the mucusless diet. That was one thing that that author had pointed out is it takes about 2 years to get rid of the mucus that's in the body, stored in the on the cellular level, that is blocking the pathways of elimination. And mm-hmm. once those are open, he says that you would be able to take nutrition from the air that you breathe. The gases in the air mm-hmm. would be able to also provide nutrition to the body.
Well, I believe those things are totally possible. I think that takes incredibly diligent work over a long period of time.
Yes.
Obviously, as he stated, I don't deny that that can happen. I get excited to think it could. I think most people are a long way from that.
At least we know that that place exists and it's possible and what the body is capable of doing. If listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Okay, so my website is maureenfontaine.ca.
Maureen spelled MaureenFontaine.
.ca. Mm-hmm. You can just go into the Contact Us window there, and you can send me an email through there. That's probably the easiest way.
Your work is in helping people is just fantastic to hear about, and thanks again for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a delight. I've learned a lot myself, too.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Join me again next Monday, 10 p.m. A big thank you to the listeners who supported this radio station in this past fund drive, and the hosts, producers, and the staff of WBAI.
Cannot fly very high. I find you so far from my sight. I'm lost in my old green light. Don't help me. A big white plastic finger surrounds my dark green hair. But it's not your unknown caress, it's not from your unknown right hand. Oh, don't. The sun, the darkness, my name is Green Wave. Death, salt, South America is my name. World is my name, my size. And under my name, here am I. My little grasshopper plane. Cannot.